Ignition sequence start. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Liftoff.
Check, 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 check. I literally just create madness.
Boiler up.
I'm going to go off here.
They don't have a great quarterback.
I got to take a break. I'm getting in trouble.
To win the Big Ten, you first got to win the West.
Bad Bunny.
Have you heard his name in a while?
No.
Has it bothered you?
No. Defensively, they got to come in with some confidence.
Is that even analytics?
I am in a parking garage. I'm kind of lost.
Terrence Shannon, Matthew Meyer, RJ Melendez, Coleman Hawkins.
These trumpet presentations aren't over.
I didn't come here to go 5-7.
I'm so proud of Illinois football right now.
I'm so tired of Joel Embiid.
We're not taking Patrick Corbin.
I want to bet the Bears.
Oh.
You are Reba McEntire's niece.
Roshan Russell.
Coach Bielma.
You know, Long, you're a salute to yourself.
What?
We got all kinds of things for you here.
There's a lot of glass.
Oh.
Guys, we have breaking news.
Uh-oh.
It's the drive.
Schmack dogs.
Hey, what's up? It's The Drive with Sam Piper, ESPN Radio 93.5. Derek Piper, Kyle Tosk here today. No Lon. He'll be back tomorrow. It's good to be back on the airwaves. We were off yesterday, afternoon baseball, Cardinals and Padres. A walk-off win for the Cardinals, as if that matters. But they did win. And you heard it on the station, ESPN Radio 93.5. Tomorrow we'll be at Pia's. We'll fill you in more on those details. I want to read off some of the specials. What you need to know, 3 to 5 p.m. tomorrow at Pia's, we'll be broadcasting there outside. Nice beer garden. We can sit out there. You got Captain Morgan specials. You've got the ability to get a Slugger Burger, get order off the menu, sit, kick back, relax, and let's talk some football. You can sit and Lon and I always, during the commercial breaks, before the show, after the show, like to mingle around and chat up some people. But it's always been a great crowd out there the last couple of years. We've got a lot of really good response. Eric Meyer and the crew over there at Pia's does a great job. So we'll be out there tomorrow. You're definitely going to want to join us. I know Diane Ducey is going to do some DJing after the show as well. I won't be able to stick around too long after the show this time, but usually we do for at least an hour to, you know, kick back and partake in some of the festivities that you guys get to do while we are on the air. But as for today, Kyle, we got two more sleeps until Illinois and Toledo, 6:30 Memorial Stadium. It's here. It is very, very close. And really,
I'm getting excited.
Oh man, it needs to happen. I know the common phrase or the popular one right now is like, let's get out of the talking season, all the speculation, all the this is what's going to happen, this is what I'm worried about, I think this will happen for this player, I think this team will be good, maybe not as good as some people think for another. Let's just find out. Let's find out what, especially and particularly, what Brett Bielema has to work with here in year three, what Luke Altmyer looks like, what a defense that replaces a lot, especially in the secondary, looks like. And let's get some answers and get things rolling. And it's not going to be an easy test out of the gate. I'm not saying the Illinois should be terrified of Toledo, but a MAC champion that is predicted to win the MAC once again comes in, experienced quarterback. And as we talked to Kyle Rowland earlier in the week, you know, Daquan Finn has got the ability to hurt you with his legs, with his arm. I just wonder, as we've discussed here recently, can he have enough time there in the pocket? But in terms of attacking that secondary, there were some announcements today from Brett Bielema, who met with the media for the second time this week. Bielema very gracious with his time, meeting with the media twice during game week, both on Mondays and Thursdays. We'll play some of that tomorrow, I know for sure. And I think we're going to play some audio from Aaron Henry and also Barry Lunny as we get into the second hour of this show. But Bielema had a couple of significant announcements regarding starting lineups. You get on the back end, let's start there, a little bit of a surprise, Kyle. First of all, how you doing, by the way?
I'm doing well. As you could probably have guessed when there was an awkward silence there at the beginning. I'm behind the board again today.
That's
I forgot to turn the mics on.
That's right. It's week one. We're getting the dust off. You know?
We gotta get into the season mode here, but I'm doing well.
It's all good. It's all good. No sweat for sure. So in terms of the secondary, we know Matthew Bailey's out the first 2 weeks. A guy that would have started at strong safety off the bat, of course, a position that Sidney Brown manned last year with he was outstanding. I mean, he was an all Big Ten, making an impact probably in the NFL right away type of guy. And with him out, you shuffle the deck a little bit. You move Miles Scott to free safety, and then you've got to plug that hole at strong safety. I've been looking at Demetrius Hill, the freshman All-American from FIU, who comes in, and a lot of people expected him to get that spot. But now it was announced today that instead it's going to be another transfer, Clayton Bush from SIU, who's going to be your starter at strong safety. Demetrius Hill will be in the rotation. Nakario Harper from Louisville, another transfer, will be in the rotation as well. But now we have that picture. We know that Taz Nicholson, Tyler Strain, Xavier Scott as your corners, and then you got Miles Scott and Clayton Bush at the safety positions. What'd you make of that announcement? Did that catch you by surprise at all? Not to say that, you know, Bush being the starter means Hill won't play at all. It will be a rotation, but I figured Demetrius Hill was going to be the guy.
Yeah, I wasn't necessarily surprised because I think there's just so much unknown about all these guys in the secondary. I think they brought in a lot of different bodies to compete and to have a chance to get on the field. They were most active in the transfer portal on the back end of the defense as compared to all the other positions. And I wasn't necessarily surprised. There wasn't with Matthew Bailey out, to me, I don't know much about a lot of these guys. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't one guy I was looking at like, oh, well, that's going to be the starter at this spot. Really, it was Taz Nicholson at corner and then the other four spots, at least up until recently, once we've gotten some clarity with like Xavier Scott and Tyler Strain being surefire starters. Those other four spots back there, I really didn't know much about and was just going to kind of wait and see and trust the judgment of the coaching staff, who has put together really good back ends here the last 2 years. And I'm just excited to see what these guys look like. Talking season's over. We've talked about the uncertainty and the youth and the inexperience in the secondary. Now it's time to see them play and see how they're going to build off that loaded one from last year. And honestly, the biggest surprise to me, and this was kind of a known commodity as we've gotten closer to training camp. Rep Bielema mentioned this a week or two ago. Miles Scott being the starting free safety, a guy that was at wide receiver last year, a guy that made that great catch against Iowa as a starting wide receiver last year. Now he's going to be the starter at free safety. I was surprised about that. But then you look back at the last two guys who are now both in the NFL, Kirby Joseph and Kendall Smith, were both receivers turned safeties and both had five picks. So I'm optimistic about that. But I just trust this staff with how good that group was last year. Three top three round picks, for lack of a better term, in the NFL draft. I just have so much trust. I know there's a lot of unknown, but I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt, and I'm excited to see what we've got.
No, I'm glad you mentioned that. That's one thing that you can look at the roster. And look, you go around college football, it's a lot easier in the NFL when you're having turnover at a certain position where you're filling that hole usually with somebody that you know of, like a free agent addition that has a stat line, or a draft pick that has more of a reputation at that point in terms of more public knowledge of what you'd probably get. In college, you're filling these holes with, yes, recruits, and if you follow that closely, you can have a good idea of how they're projected coming out of high school. But you do mention there, like, Miles Scott was a receiver, played receiver last year. I looked up today and saw Kendall Smith was a receiver as a recruit and then converted. I had forgotten that Kirby Joseph was that as well. But yeah, I think that Brett Bielema and Aaron Henry definitely deserve the benefit of the doubt at this point in terms of their player development, putting guys in a good position to be successful. You get Jim Leonard in the mix as well, a former standout NFL-level secondary player, and then obviously a top-notch defensive coordinator being around your program. And I was reading one of Joey Wagner's articles about calling Joey Article. He's pretty much that, because he is churning out content left and right. I'll have to text him that during a break. But Joey Wagner on Atlanta Inquirer about Myles Scott. And one of the lines that Brett Bielema had said within the last month was that Jim Leonard would pretty much came and started just evaluating practices, like kind of a blank slate. Just tell me what you think. I'm not going to give you any like pre-indications of look for this or look for that. Just sit back and watch us play and see what you think. And he told Brett that Myles Scott was one of the guys that really impressed him with his instincts. And obviously he's got some athleticism back there, but it is interesting that you have a former walk-on receiver. That's another note. He was a walk-on, preferred walk-on, now turned starting free safety in this week one against the Toledo team that can throw it. Yes, that is further emphasis why Gabe Akis, Keith Randolph, Johnny Newton, Seth Coleman need to get there in the backfield and make Daquan Finn uncomfortable and limit the time that he's going to have to process the field and make some plays. But the secondary will get challenged. And you said it right there, though. I mean, a lot of question marks. I've seen just as much of Clayton Bush as I have of Demetrius Hill, and that's zero. So, and that's pretty much a lot for everybody because you had like the spring practice that was public. But outside of that, I mean, even those that cover this team extremely close have not been allowed in inside the doors too much as far as practice goes. So we got two more days to finally figure this thing out, or at least waiting until we do, because that's when we'll really start to learn stuff about that secondary. The other announcement regarding starters, you have a announced starting right guard in Josh Geske, who beat out Jordan Slaughter. So he's going to be joining that front line along with the likes of Julian Pearl. You're going to have, who's of course playing left tackle. You've got also Josh Kreutz starting at center. You've got Zy Chrysler. You've got Isaiah Adams. Any thoughts on Josh Geske being able to beat out Jordan Slaughter, a guy who's more of a veteran? Geske, I believe, a redshirt sophomore versus Slaughter being a senior. On that offensive line?
Not really. I think this has kind of been expected. I feel like Jordan Slaughter last year was really good kind of in that rotational spot. He's the veteran. He's that sixth guy that can rotate into a couple different spots. I thought he played that role well last year. Not necessarily sure that he is starter quality. I'm excited to see a younger piece that this staff brought in. The staff has now developed here for the last couple of years. Same with Josh Kreutz, who's kind of been that center in waiting after Doug Kramer and now Alex Pilstrom, who left last year. But I think just having that left side, I think there could be some growing pains on that right side when you look at Zy Chrysler, Geske, throw Kreutz in there at center. I think having the stability on the left side of the line is just going to be so huge for the entire offense, for those guys in particular, having known commodities in Julian Pearl and Isaiah Adams. I think that's huge. I think it's going to be huge in this game where you want to be the more physical team. You want to create running lanes. You want to run all over Toledo and impose your will physically. I think it's going to be big time. And I think those young guys will get tested, but it's a good matchup for them to kind of be thrown into the fire and see what you got here. And now these are guys that once Isaiah Adams, Julian Pearl, those guys leave, this is the next crop, and this is kind of Brett Bielema's first crop of his own guys here. I know Josh Kreutz kind of carried over, and these guys carried over recruiting classes a little bit, but he's kind of building up his next core here on the offensive line.
Yeah, you got to love that left side. Like you said, Julian Pearl, left tackle, Isaiah Adams, left guard, Josh Kreutz now taking over at center, and then Josh Geske, right guard, Zy Chrysler, right tackle. And that is important. Running the football is always going to be important to a Brett Bielema-led football team. But when you look at Toledo, the fact that they had a third-team All-American last year at corner, and Isaiah Williams was talking him up when we spoke to him on Monday, just watching the tape and understanding that's going to be – we know Isaiah, elusive, very talented once you get the ball in his hands, but Toledo's got – the ability to make life tough on him, make life tough on Luke Altmyer in his first start with the Illini. I think that's still going to be something that a lot of people, whether you're watching on TV or you're in the stadium on Saturday, they want to see what Luke's got and ability. We've heard about his ability to push the ball downfield. We've heard about what he can do with his feet. And I think that the idea that he's a little more athletic than Tommy DeVito, Tommy could extend plays and move in the pocket well, but if Altmyer can break one, I think that's something that's going to be exciting. But that being said, the experience in the Toledo secondary could make life challenging in terms of what that looks like in his first start, and being able to win those battles up front to keep the chains moving, keep yourself in some good situations, you know, third and manageable, third and short, just moving those sticks and being able to pound it out with Josh McCray and Reggie Love. And I think that that's still going to be a huge staple year in and year out of a Brett Bielema team. And again, we'll learn what Josh Geske looks like as a starter come Saturday night. Tonight, you're going to have some games. We got Kent Brown in the building, so we got to catch a break and get to Kent. We're excited to be joined by him to get filled in by about the 1983 Big Ten title-winning Illini. It's the 40-year reunion. We're working on some guests, by the way, for tomorrow. I think we got some things lined up, but we'll fill you in with some more details. I'll text Lon and see if I can share the names exactly, but I think we are in good position to get maybe a former player, maybe two, out there to Pia's to hang out with us tomorrow. Jay Lehman already said he'll be there, but Kent Brown's going to let us know what it was looking like, because admittedly Kyle and I were not alive, not to make Kent feel old, in 1983 when that team was winning the Big Ten title and going to the Rose Bowl. But before we catch a break tonight, Kyle, we'll go over this more in depth as the show goes along, but you got some Big Ten football set to kick off. You
nice
got
a little appetizer on a Thursday night. This is great. And I like that they're doing this. They've got a lot more Thursday, Friday night games this year.
Yeah. And it's not just some random, Big Ten teams playing, but they're playing, you know,
right
now. I don't want to throw any school I put out there. Let's say Indiana State. Let's go outside the state and say if it was like, Purdue and Indiana State. Okay, yeah. All right. It's football. It counts, but eh. This is Nebraska, Matt Rhule's debut on the road against a P.J. Fleck-led Minnesota team that won 9 games last year. They replaced a lot. I'm very, very curious to see what Nebraska looks like in that first season under Rhule. I mean, they weren't a ton of close games. I was looking it up for an article I did on Illini Inquirer. Nebraska lost 5 games by a touchdown or less last year. It just seemed like Scott Frost found a way to lose in a lot of situations. Can that be felt in terms of a difference of Matt Rhule in terms of competency at head coach right off the bat? Or is it going to be something that they're going to give him a boatload of money and he's going to have to figure it out progressively, slowly but surely? You got that one. You got Utah and Florida, which is really intriguing with the injury issues of Utah and Graham Mertz starting for Florida. So scale of 1 to 10, how excited are you for the football that's going to take place tonight?
I'm probably at an 8 or a 9. I'm so ready for college football. Last weekend was a nice little teaser, but none of those games excited me very much. I think now you're getting into a couple games that have a lot of intrigue. That Utah-Florida game would be a lot better if Utah's quarterback was healthy and playing in Cam Rising. I'm still excited for it. But as a Big Ten fan, I'm very curious to see what Nebraska and Minnesota look like, because I think those are the two teams in the Big Ten West that people are kind of writing off a little bit. I think there's still two teams that have a lot of potential. I think it's kind of Wisconsin, Iowa, and Illinois in that top group of teams that people think are going to be at the top of the West. But Nebraska and Minnesota have good coaches, have talent on their roster, and I'm interested to see what those two teams look like. I know you like Nebraska tonight. I saw your article. I'm very skeptical about year one just because Nebraska's been so horrible here.
I thought you were going to say I'm very skeptical about your betting advice. No, I understand if you said that too.
I can't bet yet, so I won't comment
all
on
right,
that.
There you go.
I'm skeptical about Nebraska. I'm interested to see if they come out and make a statement in Matt Rhule's first game tonight.
Yeah, I took Nebraska +7 for anybody out there that is interested in betting that or just interested in watching and see if I fail in that venture. But, Minnesota with their quarterback, no more Tanner Morgan, no more Mo Ibrahim, no more 3 of their 5 starters on the offensive line from last year, and they do replace a decent amount on defense as well. But our guy AK, Ethan Kelikamanis. I'm attempting. I'm at least giving it a shot. I know that I've read a bunch of stuff about, and that's where I'm finally excited to shift out of this time of year is, it's like P.J. Fleck and that staff love this dude, and they think that the future is so bright for him. But you could read that about so many different guys. I don't know. If I look at his stat line last year, I know. I think you mentioned
it. I still remember him throwing two picks against Illinois. Now, again, three top 70 draft picks that he threw him to. But
right.
He just he didn't look ready to go. I know he's got an offseason now, but he's still in that prove-it mode that Luke Altmyer's in, that Hudson Card's in, that and Cade McNamara even coming off a year off now. Like, yeah, I don't – I'm interested to see how he looks. I don't necessarily have super high hopes for him.
Yeah, I think that's part of my reasoning for riding with the Huskers, at least to make it a close game, because I just have some major questions about that. But we will discuss more the week one slate and the games getting set to kick off tonight as we go along in this show. We're going to have Kent Brown. He's here, kind enough to join us in studio here in Philo. We're going to get to him after this break. If you want to weigh in, you can. 217-359-2255 on the U of I Alina Link text line. Stick with us. This is The Drive.
Does your home have those annoying outdoor spigots that leak and have no pressure? Dogtown Heating, Air, and Plumbing can help. Install a new Woodford outdoor spigot so your gardens and flowers don't suffer in this summer heat. Make sure your home's outdoors look great and call Dogtown Heating, Air, and Plumbing at 217-841-4728. Dogtown Heating, Air, and Plumbing. Your home's best friend.
Illini fans, with the return of Fighting Illini Athletics this month, now's the perfect time to refresh your Illini wardrobe. Stop by Game Day Spirit, shop some of their great selection of t-shirts, sweatshirts, polos, and more. They have new arrivals coming in daily with great brands like Nike, Champion, and Tommy Bahama. You'll be sure to find something you love at Game Day Spirit. Shop with them at the corner of Neal and Kirby in Champaign, 6th and Green in Campustown, or online 24/7 at GameDaySpirit.com. Game Day Spirit, where Illini fans shop.
Pepsi-Cola Champaign-Urbana Bottling is getting summer started with some fresh new products. Take a break from the sun and get a taste of cool, crisp, refreshing Starry Lemon Lime flavored soda. Stay hydrated with Gatorade's new Fast Twitch Energy Drink and get your daily source of vitamin A and C with Gatorade Fit. Find your afternoon pick-me-up with Starbucks Caramel and White Chocolate Mocha Frappuccino mini cans. Order these delicious beverages and everything else with Pepsi-Cola Champaign-Urbana Bottling Company. Visit PepsiColaCU.
Kelsey Furniture in downtown Tuscola sells Tempur-Pedic beds. What's it like?
I'm going to tell you right now, Stevie, that thing is the best thing I've ever slept on in my life. My wife and I both have said we've never had better night's sleep. And the people at Kelsey's were fantastic. Brian is the guy that helped us. You know, as much as I did my research, he had a world of knowledge about beds themselves. Oh, man, it's like sleeping on a cloud, man.
Kelsey Furniture, downtown Tuscola.
It's Emily Atkins. She owns something called Happy Healing. Tell me about what you have planned coming up.
September 9th, we have our spiritual spa day. We have three wellness practitioners coming. We have Brenda, who does sound bowl healings with crystal bowls, Drea, who does facials, and we have Emily, who does massages. So we'll be selling tickets, and so you'll have a half hour of each, and then I'll be there and we can make candles too. You can go to the website, happyhealing.us.
Hi, I'm Tyler Weaver, president of Carpet Weavers Flooring and Furniture Gallery. This Labor Day weekend, it's your time to save more than ever before on flooring, furniture, and accessories. Choose Mohawk waterproof luxury vinyl floors or durable Mohawk RevWood, and the installation is half off. Buy Mohawk carpet, and the installation is free. Choose from today's best colors and styles, including exceptionally durable Mohawk Smart Strand carpet. And during our Labor Day sale, you'll also get up to a $1,000 rebate on Mohawk carpets and floors. Then shop our amazing selection of furniture, rugs, and accessories. It's all buy one, get one half off. Plus, now you can buy it all with special 2 years free financing. You'll always find unmatched service from our family-owned business. If you're ready to start a project, we're here for you. Don't miss our Labor Day sale through Monday only at Carpet Weavers Flooring and Furniture Gallery. Open Labor Day 10 to 5.
Like every bank, there's a time every day when we stop making loans. But at Iroquois Federal, we never stop making a difference. Thanks to an amazing team of employees who give back to their local communities all over Central Illinois. From hospital boards and local school programs to Kiwanis and the United Way, Iroquois Federal employees donated more than 1,000 volunteer hours last year. And we'll do it again next year, because the only thing we like more than making a loan is making a difference. Iroquois Federal, still friendly, still local, still here. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Whoa.
Welcome to Sarah Champaign, home of their award-winning Honda dealership, a double recipient of the prestigious Honda President's Award. With a legacy of excellence, they offer you the finest selection of Honda vehicles backed by unparalleled customer service. As a two-time winner, they're committed to exceeding your expectations. Visit them today at Route 45 at Burwash or Sarah, S-E-R-R-A, Champaign.com. Sarah Champaign, home of Honda, BMW, Subaru, Buick, and GMC. That's SarahChampaign.com.
Urbana's Market at the Square has been cultivating a vibrant scene in CU since 1979. Get to know your farmers bringing locally harvested honey, crafts, jewelry, art, fresh-cut flowers, plus produce including fresh leafy greens and root vegetables, fresh baked treats, and a wide selection of proteins. Going on now, every Saturday, 7 a.m. till noon, rain or shine at Illinois and Vine, it's Urbana Market at the Square. Find Urbana Market on Facebook or urbanamarket.org.
Illini fans, gear up for the start of football season this year with the official fan store, the Fighting Illini Game Day Spirit. Get ready to support your Fighting Illini by shopping their great selection of Illini football merchandise, including t-shirts, sweatshirts, even brand new Nike replica jerseys. Shop with them at the corner of Neal and Kirby in Champaign, 6th and Green in Campustown, or online 24/7 at GameDaySpirit.com. Game Day Spirit, where Illini fans shop.
Hi, it's Stevie J. Sit back and relax and take the drive with Lante and Derek Piper. Weekdays 4 to 6 right here on ESPN Radio 93.5.
Before we get to Kent Brown, I got to tell you about Busey. All you need is love and financial intimacy. Before you walk down the aisle, Busey suggests setting a solid financial footing. A couple of tips for this as you go into your new journey. Will you and your spouse be keeping finances separate or combined? Consider individual spending and saving habits. Make this decision together. It'll help you find a system that works. Couples that tackle money problems together will find that their relationship is better for it. Calculate monthly costs. Choose how bills will be paid. Who will write checks? Monitor investments. Take care of taxes. You can also share your credit. A thing called Cupid's Arrow. Develop a plan to shoot down existing debt, starting with balances that carry the high interest rates. Make sure to set your goals and be diligent in reaching them. Busey can help you with all of this. You can meet with their team, set up an appointment, or just go to Busey.com to be able to schedule meeting with them, or just stop by one of their convenient location. Busey, member FDIC. All right, back on the drive, ESPN Radio 93.5, Derek Piper, Kyle Tosk, and Kent Brown, longtime SID, Associate AD at Illinois, good friend of the show, here live in studio. Kent, thanks for coming out.
Anytime I can make the trip to Philo, I'll make the trip.
It's just booming. Especially out here, right?
Yeah, yeah, no, it's great. From where I live in Urbana, it's right down, you know, Route 130. It's just an easy hop, skip, and jump down here.
And you got your Cubs hat, which you made sure to point out. Now, Lon's not here to be able to have some kind of reaction to that. I'm a Cardinals fan. To me, baseball season's been dead for about a month or so, or a little bit longer than that. I don't know. But I'm happy for you guys. Kyle's a Cubs fan. You're a Cubs fan.
Way to go, Kyle.
You had a fun team.
I was totally expecting to give Lon a little bit of the business today with my Cub hat on after the last couple days. But he'll have to wait till next time.
We can make that happen for sure. Make that happen. We want to bring you in to pick your brain about 1983. You got the 40-year reunion. Before we do that, can I just ask you, like, how you feeling about this team? Like, you were around the program a ton, obviously, as recently as last year, where they had a really nice breakthrough season, 8 wins, go to the ReliaQuest Bowl, and Brett Bielema's attempt to follow that up. And obviously, he said, we had the clip on our intro, I didn't come here to go 5-7. He said, I didn't come here to go 8-5 either. What do you think about what he's going to do this year in following up a really nice season last season?
Well, you know, I have total trust in Brett Bielema. I mean, he is a great coach, and he is the perfect guy for us, especially at this point in time, coming off of where we were at prior to that. And so the relationships he's built in the state, recruiting inroads, all these type of things are what we're building on. So that being said, you know, I have a lot of trust in him and his staff and who he's hired and what they're doing in developing our guys. But we haven't seen our quarterback play yet, right? We haven't seen throw a pass or take a snap yet at in Memorial Stadium. We have some good running backs, but, you know, we're replacing one of the best we've ever had in Chase. We have four defensive backs who are playing the NFL who, you know, we got – I feel like there's some skill back there in athleticism, but we haven't seen them really yet. And I know there's – you know, you talked a little bit about earlier about some of the new, you know, starters and who's going to fill into roles. Our defensive line and offensive line, I feel, are really good. And so, and I think our wide receiver room is really good. And so I think we have some pieces that are, that should be really, you know, very positive. So I'm eternally optimistic always, right? I'm not sure, you know, like Stevie is the undefeated every season guy. I'm trying to be a little bit more realist, but I do like, I like our chances this season, having a really good year. So I'm excited about it. I'm excited to watch them play and see when they roll them out there on Saturday night. And, hey, Toledo's got a good team. I know they have high expectations, and their quarterback's really good. And, you know, somehow, no one ever wants to look ahead, but, you know, the Kansas quarterback was chosen the Big 12 offensive player, preseason player of the year. And I'm like, yep. Holy cow. And so he's obviously, and they've got a lot of expectations there, kind of like we do. So these first few games are really important to see where we're at. And I can't wait. I can't wait for Saturday night, 6:30.
I could pick your brain on a lot of different things. I don't want to get too hung up on it because I want to give 83 its due time. But like, it's kind of I wouldn't say a running joke, but something just, people have found comical, where you find a non-conference opponent like Kansas. And when it was announced, I'll admit, I was like, well, can we do that for basketball? And Kansas probably isn't going to be very good. And they have the best quarterback they've had since Tommy Rees, like 20 years ago. Or maybe not Tommy Rees, but I forget the guy's name. You've had through the years, you know, South Florida, when you had in, they were pretty good. Or UTSA was pretty good. Like, how, when you're in the football office, I know that you're not building the schedule yourself. I don't think you did. Maybe you did behind the scenes.
No, but I would tell you, it's interesting because last year, last year was my last year in the office, right? So starting this summer, I've had very little interaction. I've engaged very little in the department or anything. But even at the time, we saw where Kansas was at.
Yeah.
Toledo. And I was like, you know, we need to go to the opposite, the George Costanza, that's the opposite way. So whoever's really good in the mid-level or the teams that we're looking to schedule, whoever's really good right now, that's who we need to get on our schedule, because then they will have rotated, that coach would have left and gone on somewhere else, and then they're still rebuilding, and we'll catch them at the right time, because we catch them, seems like we signed all these teams to play when they were at their low ebb. They sign a really good coach who comes in and builds up the program, and that's right when we play them.
Right.
So I said we need to go the opposite way and sign them in when they're good. And so they're rotating back down and then still have to rebuild again. So I don't know. It's a running joke, right?
Yeah.
I mean, every time we've played somebody, they're on the cusp of one of their greatest seasons ever.
But I'll admit, I am, well, definitely number one, excited for Saturday to see what Illinois is going to do against a decent MAC team for sure.
Absolutely.
And then that Kansas-Illinois game has me really fired up. I can't wait to watch that game in Lawrence. Jalen Daniels for Kansas and against this defense, it'll be fun. But let's get to what we were setting out to do, which a history lesson for Kyle and I. A lot of people out there will have some memories come back up, and I want to see what memories you have about 1983, 40-year reunion on Saturday. Really, really cool. To be doing this. It was a Big Ten title winner. I was reading up today, and it was the first time in forever that either Michigan or Ohio State, one of the two at least, didn't have a share of the Big Ten title. So Illinois, 82, they went to the Liberty Bowl, and that was Tony Eason, and that was the first bowl game for Illinois in almost 20 years.
Right.
And then the following season, Jack Trudeau is the quarterback, Mike White, of course, is the coach, and they go to the Rose Bowl. So just kind of open-ended, what stands out when you think about the 1983 Illini football team?
Well, you know, it all started. I mean, Mike White was had already coached 3 years. In 81, we had a winning record, and this is when there weren't very many bowls, and so we didn't get a chance to go to one. And so in 82, we go to the Liberty Bowl, and it was a big deal to go to a bowl game. It had been 1963, the 64 Rose Bowl, but the 63 season the previous time, and so there was a lot of excitement around the program. But, you know, we were losing some really good players. Obviously, Tony Eason had been a two-year star, had been a Heisman Trophy candidate, NFL draft pick, first-round draft pick after his senior year. And I think going into 83, there were a lot of us, a lot of the people. And I was on campus. I was a student. And I was following it, I was tracking it pretty closely. And I remember I had a class. I had a journalism, sports journalism class. And my final story was about the cost and how to travel to Pasadena, because I was convinced that the 83 team was going to be really good and go to the Rose Bowl. And here's all the different options to go to Pasadena, you know, rent a motorhome, take the train, fly, drive, you know, all these things. I broke it all down. That was my deal.
Nice.
Yeah. And so I was ahead of the game, on the head of the curve on that one. Yeah,
Which one did you do?
Yeah, I stayed home. I said I was going to go next time, right? And then, because it was expensive, right? I was a student, yeah, and I just didn't have any money. And so I think the local expectations knew that we thought we had a pretty good team. I think that the preseason prognosticators had us around fourth, fifth, sixth in the league. And so there was a little bit of disrespect. And part of that was because we lost so much off that previous year. And I think they felt like the defense was going to be really good. Don Thorpe, Mark Buckus, Terry Cole was another one. The linebackers were good. We had some good defensive backs. And so we thought the defense was going to be really good. And we go right down to Missouri in the opening game of the season. Of course, none of the games are on television hardly. There was only one or two games nationally that were televised, so you hardly ever got to see them. So I had to listen on the radio, and we lay an egg at Missouri. And Trudeau had threw the ball pretty well. We had a young sophomore wide receiver, David Williams, who was just starting. His brother Oliver had played here and had done really well. And so came out of that Missouri game a little shell-shocked, I think, a little bit about where we were at. Stanford was the next game, I think, as a other non-conference game, and played him in Champaign, and it was, I think, 17-7, I think, yep, was the score, and it was a good game. You know, it wasn't great, but, you know, I think it was just a very workmanlike, I think, victory. And then the month of October was one that everybody was pointing to, because there was Big Ten games in October. Iowa, Ohio State, and Michigan were all predicted to be the top of the Big Ten, at Michigan State, who had just beaten, I think, Notre Dame the week before we played them, was the first game of the month. And we went up there and played very well and won the game. So now we're starting to feel pretty good about things, right? We got a couple wins under our belt. And then it was Iowa in Champaign. Do I have the order right?
At Michigan State and then Iowa.
So Iowa comes in, and they're ranked
fourth
in the country. And I think Chuck Long's the quarterback, I think. And so, you know, they have a lot of high expectations. And, I mean, we just put the hammer down on them early. I mean, I think it was – we scored like three touchdowns or something in the first – I mean, it was like 21 or 27 or something, nothing at halftime, you know. And so early in that game, it was – basically over. And then there was a goal line stand in that game that Iowa was trying to get on the board in the second half, and we stopped them on four downs inside the 2-yard line or something, and stopped it, which was a huge deal. So 33-0.
33-0. Chuck Long was the quarterback.
Okay. And so, you know, here we are. We are rocking and rolling now. We're starting to feel pretty good about ourselves. I think the next game was at Wisconsin.
It was.
And
27-15.
Yeah, you know, went up there and I think handled business. I mean, I think they were a kind of a middle of the pack league team at that point in time. And then it was Ohio State, and again, Ohio State's ranked. They're always good. They were number six, and so here we are. And I think we trailed for a big part of that game. It was a really physical. That was a really physical team. That Illinois team was very physical. Defensively, had some just hard-hitting guys. The offensive line was really good. Jim Jariga was a guy who played a long time in the NFL for the Denver Broncos. Chris Babiar was a offensive lineman on that team. I can't remember all the other guys' names off the top of my head. I should have done a little bit more research on that. But very physical game, back and forth, back and forth. And I think there was a play and I think Earl Bruce was coaching Ohio State at the time. And so instead of kicking a field goal that would have made it a six-point Ohio State lead, they went for a fourth down pretty deep in our territory, and we stopped it. So we get the ball back, and there wasn't that much time, like a minute and a half or something like that. And there was this little-known walk-on wide receiver named Scott Golden from Argentina Orienta, I believe, who, you know, who'd ever heard of Scott Golden? No one knew who Scott Golden was. And all of a sudden, the very first play, Trudeau throws a 25-yard pass play along the sideline to Scott Golden. And all of a sudden, we got a little bit of life, right? We're downfield. Next play, ran the same play to Scott Golden, this time for maybe not quite as far, but it was somewhere in the 20s. And so all of a sudden, we are down the field. And Trudeau was not the fastest afoot, but Jack, I think, ended up had to bootleg a play. And again, he ran and got it down. So now we're in scoring position. Easily, we're going to kick a field goal to at least tie this game. And I'll never forget, because I was watching on the west side, and Thomas Rooks got a pitch and turned the corner and rushed right down the sideline to score a touchdown and less than a minute to go. And I think it was right about a minute to go, but it was bedlam, because all of a sudden, instead of just worrying about tie, we have a win and the lead over Ohio State. So I think that was, what, 17-13?
17-13, yeah.
Okay, so that play and those two catches were a big deal, right? That was, it showed, you know, all of a sudden we can come from behind. We got guys who are making plays, and no one knew who Scott, I'm just telling you, you know, until that point, no one even knew he was on the roster. And so, let's see, who's the next game after that?
So you
that?
Go at Purdue, at you Purdue. Win 35-21.
Okay. All right, so it looks like we handled business there, and I don't remember much about Purdue, because again, you know, hey, I was a farm boy, and so if we didn't have a home game, I was probably home on a tractor listening to the game on the radio. So I don't have a lot of visual memories of that Purdue game, but sounds like we handled business pretty well over there. And then it's the Michigan game.
Michigan. So you go number 4 Iowa, number 6 Ohio State, number 8 Michigan.
Yeah.
In the same month.
In the same month, all home games.
Yep.
Right? And so it's also Halloween weekend on campus, and that's that right. Was before everything got shut down on the Halloween celebration. I mean, it was a big deal. Okay, back in the day, they would block off campus town pretty much, and it was a free for all around all the Green Street bars. All those, it was kind of a crazy time. So this was coming that night, Saturday night, and it was a big game, because CBS was in town. CBS was doing the games. They did a game. It was like I said, there was only a couple national games on each week, and so this was a national game, and it was pretty much known. I mean, looking at the schedules, that whoever won this game was certainly going to be in the driver's seat to go to the Rose Bowl. And knowing what had happened a couple of years, you know, Bo Schembechler did not like Illinois and Mike White. We had hired the coach,
Gary Moeller,
off of Bo's staff. Gary was horrible here. The record was horrible. The recruiting was bad. And he got fired after 3 years. And Bo didn't feel like that Illinois gave him long enough to get the job done, and really held a grudge against Mike and Illinois. In fact, I think it was in 81. We were playing at Michigan, and we're up 21-0, and Tony Eason's going crazy, throwing touchdown passes, and throws an interception in the end zone that would have been 28, okay? Would have been 28-0 in the first half at Michigan. And Michigan scored 71 straight points after that, and we lose 71-21. So, I mean, he was not averse to rolling up the score on us,
wow,
right? So there was a lot of payback. There was a lot of emotion in knowing what was at stake. So this game comes in. The place goes crazy. So I do have a personal story about the Michigan game. So on Thursday, I'm living with 3 other guys in an apartment, and I'm having breakfast, eating my cereal with Mel McMeans, his name. He's my roommate. And I said, man, Mel, I said, I had this dream last night. I said that we won the game. We beat Michigan this week. And I said, you know, the score, I actually have a score. The score was 16-6. And Mel's like, oh, wow, that'd be great. That'd be really cool if we beat them. But it's pretty specific, right? I'm like, I don't know. It's just the way that that was my dream, is that was the score. So, you know, we go to the game, and I mean, it is a physical game, 7-6, or 7, let's see, 16-6. So, yeah, 7-6. We're up 7-6, and Trudeau hits David Williams on a crossing pattern. He goes down the far sideline in for the touchdown to make it 14-6 to kind of wrap it up, because Michigan just wasn't moving the ball. Our defense was controlling things. Place was going absolutely crazy. And so Mel looks at me, there's just a couple minutes left, and he says, you know, hey, your dream was right that we won, but man, your score was close. The very next play, we punted to them. Their guy received it at like the 2-yard line and tried to circle around in the end zone to come to bring it out. And he got tackled in the end zone for a safety to make it 16-6, which was my predicted score from my dream, right? And so Mel just looks at me and his jaw drops. He goes, are you kidding me? So, of course, we were part of the group that rushed the field, just like, you know, thousands of other people that tore down the goalposts, which had become a tradition after the Ohio State game. That was when I think everybody started tearing down the goalposts after every game. It may have been Iowa, but I'm pretty sure it was Ohio State. And so, yeah, that game, that was Rose Bowl. And then that night was absolutely, it was a incredible scene on campus. So we had this huge win over Michigan. Rose Bowl's, looks like it's in sight. It's Halloween weekend. It was an absolute, one of those unforgettable campus college experiences, right? And I won't tell you everything that I did on campus.
Well, you're retired now. You're good.
Well, I mean, I'm just student. I wasn't working athletics, but it was crazy.
What was the spot to be?
You know, I mean, it was, everything was on the street at that time. So CAMS and CODs was right next door, and then over on Green Street. I mean, it's just all those places were still there. And I can't remember there was a couple places there on 6th Street, of course, that stayed until they tore them all down. But they would block all those streets off, and it was basically a free for all in that area. And everybody's dressed up in crazy college Halloween costumes. You know, some you can talk about on air, and some you can't. And so it was a blast, right? So here we go. So now we got to win. We have 3 games left against teams at the bottom of the Big Ten.
Yep.
Minnesota, we went up and handled them pretty
50-23.
Yeah, and we had, I think we had a maybe an interception return for a touchdown that kind of turned that game and let us just take off and put that one away. Indiana wasn't very good, and so that was the game that clinched it. And then we ended up at Northwestern on the last game of the regular season. No one's gone undefeated and beaten every team in the Big Ten. This was one of the few times that they played all every other opponent and every other school in the Big Ten.
Yep.
And so, you know, playing 9 games in the league that year. So Northwestern was horrible. And so I think if there was 35,000 fans in the stands, 30,000 were Illinois fans. I mean, wow. It was incredible. It was all orange and blue. And I remember towards the end of the game, we were starting to gather at the bottom of the stands, and the poor usher, this lady, and I remember telling her, I said, ma'am, you're going to want to like get yourself out of the way, because this whole group, we're coming on the field and we're going to tear down that goalpost right over there. She goes, no, you can't do that. You have to stay off the field. I said, I don't think you understand what's about to happen here. I had this, this is a true conversation. I don't know if you understand what's about to happen here. All these people are behind me, we're all coming on the field and we're going to tear down the goalpost. And she kind of looked up and her eyes got real big because she could see the group gathering, right? And I said, I'm just telling you, you want to be in a safe spot. You want to get out of this way. And so she moved, and of course we rushed the field, tore down the goalpost. I did not carry it to the lake. I was always told that people carried it down to Lake Michigan, dropped it in the lake.
So like the scene when Tennessee won last year, I forget who they beat. Was it Georgia or Alabama? And they threw it in the river.
Yeah.
So when you guys were tearing down goalposts, you took it and threw it.
I didn't go out of the stadium with it. I carried it to the gate there at the north end of Dykes Field and Dykes Stadium. And then I was told that others carried it all, but it's pretty far. So I don't know if that really, I'd like to hear somebody that was part of that group that did that, but I did help maybe tear it down and carry it to the gate anyway. So, I mean, it was just an incredible season, you know, of the emotions of that, that whole month of October with those three highly ranked games in Champaign. At the time, you know, we could fit, squeeze 75,000 fans in there. They put on some, had put on some bleachers at the end on the top of the horseshoe that were supposed to be temporary that we just tore out a few years ago. Had been up there for 35 years or so, or 30 years or so. But, you know, to sell, you know, as many as we could get. And it was, every game was the place to be. And that team, you know, they were rock stars. Jack obviously was the quarterback and from another California guy. And David and like I said, Jariga played a long time. You know, it's kind of an undervalued offensive lineman, but really one of our all-time best that we ever had in that position. That defense was really good. You know, the Buckus tradition had started up again. Mark had, was Dick's nephew and was here. You know, the disappointment about that whole season was obviously the Rose Bowl, right? And they went out there 2 weeks. This is before the bubble came into existence. So their practices were all held inside the Armory. So not a great place to practice football. And so they made the decision to go out 2 weeks in advance of the game to take advantage of the weather and work out. Well, I read somewhere that their curfew, they only had two curfews. Like one was the first night and one was the night before the game. And I think those guys had a really a lot of time, and I think on their hands. And I think by the time they got to game day, you know, anytime you live in a hotel and you have all these events and you're going out after those, it wears on you from a physical standpoint and emotional standpoint, but a physical standpoint. And by the time they got to game day, I just don't think they had any juice left in the batteries or juice left in the engine to dial it up like UCLA brought it that day. And UCLA played great. I mean, there's no doubt about it. They deserved to win that game. But, man, we had a, I thought we had a better team. I thought we had a better team. They just did not bring it. And I think part of that was being out there 2 weeks before a game. That was that's a hard to live out of your suitcase for that long.
Yeah. Only a few more minutes left in this hour. I have a number of questions I could ask you. Right. I do want to ask you this. The environment, you hit on that. Like I remember 2007 and what that was like when you have – Wisconsin coming to town when Bielema was there, when you have Penn State coming to town, like that place was rocking. I imagine 01, I would have been younger, but the Sugar Bowl season, what was that scene like? Cause we spend time talking about attendance and trying to get this back. And of course, when the results are like that, I think that a lot of fans have shown that they're going to show up. What was it like to be at Memorial Stadium when you got a team playing like that and the opponents in particular that you faced?
Yeah, in, well, you know, October. The marketing staff, Tom Porter was the marketing director, but Neil Stoner really had a thing about marketing and had some great ideas. And so those that administration at that point put so much effort into making it an event. And the parking lots were jammed. The party atmosphere that was going on, it was the place to be. I mean, people planned to be there that whole time. And there was, you know, several years until the late 80s, it kind of when the team wasn't quite as good, but there was those years where it was amazing. It was just amazing. And if in the early 90s, we had to replace the east side of the upper deck. And part of that was it would start swaying up there. You know, the crowd, the student, because we had two student groups. We had two block I spots for a long time. But that upper deck on the east side, it would sway when people, and it was a little, it had to be a little scary. I've been in stadiums where it swayed. I've been in Madison. I've been in Texas A&M when they do everything, and it all moves, and it's a little disconcerting, right? To have you're up pretty high, and all of a sudden you're moving quite a bit. You think, I'm sure that's what it felt like upstairs on the east side. So, but.